If I learned anything from scripting this episode, it's that rut is a very strange word. Today we're talking vacation from marriage. Hello, my beautiful Tropicanas. Welcome back to the Ricardo Project, the podcast where we watch through I Love Lucy episode by episode and talk about its historical, emotional, and comedic impact. My name is Dana, and I'm so excited to talk today about Vacation from Marriage, which is episode six? Season two? I would say episode six. I think it's episode six. Oh, God. Hold on. Let's Wikipedia. Yep, nailed it. Episode six. God, I'm so good. It's like I have a podcast or something. Vacation from Marriage, which premiered 70 years ago today on October 27th, 1952. Before we jump into today's episode, I just want to thank everyone who reached out after last week's episode to share your top five episodes of season one. The seance got a lot more coverage than I thought it would. I was shocked. But I'd especially like to take a moment to acknowledge that I completely forgot that the amateur hour existed, and you're right, that is by far the worst episode of season one. I don't mind it as much as Be a Pal, but I understand that public consensus does have something to do with this, and so while Be a Pal is my worst episode, the amateur hour is definitely terrible. And I just had to take a moment to make a correction, I guess. Anyway, now let's get into the episode. So here's what happens in Vacation from Marriage. So Ethel starts her morning, as she usually does, heading to the Ricardo kitchen, but she's locked out this time. Lucy immediately lets her in, but she says that it's because she wanted to see what would happen if she did something different for once. Life is in a rut, you see. Specifically her life with Ricky. Every day is on repeat. Lucy predicts to the second what Ricky's going to do when he wakes up. And Ethel says that she can do the same thing with Fred, who proves her point almost immediately when he comes in looking for his glasses. Once Fred's little bit is over, Ricky's begins, and what do you know? He acts out exactly what Lucy predicted. Lucy remarks to Ethel that the two of them aren't much better than Ricky and Fred, and they call a little meeting about this stagnation in their lives. The ladies are taking this very seriously, but Ricky and Fred aren't too concerned. They kind of like that this is what their marriage is, which is actually strangely a little sweet. Lucy and Ethel don't see it this way, though. They've gone to the library, they've gotten a book that says to spend a week apart to reinvigorate their relationships, which makes Ricky kind of sad, which is also cute. Fred, of course, is snarky and seemingly fine. Lucy is going to live with Ethel. Fred is going to live with Ricky. The gang splits up to live a bachelorette life. After commercial break, we see Lucy in this like insanely gorgeous pinier, and she looks all depressed. She and Ethel have run out of fun stuff to do. They've gotten pretty sick of each other. They want to get the boys back, but they don't want to admit that they were wrong. So instead, they decide to get all dressed up and go to the Ricardo apartment, you know, quote, looking for perfume, end quote, to get them to cave first. But what they don't know is that the boys feel the same damn way. Fred even misses Ethel. They want to get back together without admitting that they miss them as well. So they're trying to think of something when the bell rings and the gals are here and they're dressed to kill. They look so good. And they're pretending that they have dates at the 21 Club, which they bring up 21 a lot in the series. I don't know if this is the first reference of it. I should have noted it, but we will hear from 21 quite a bit. So the gals linger like precious, desperate little creatures, hoping that the boys will take the bait. But instead, Ricky pretends that they also have dates, which rocks them to their core. So back at the Mertz apartment, Ethel is completely panicked. She's depressed. But Lucy is really trying to convince both of them that it's a ruse and that the boys really didn't have dates. Ethel doesn't believe this. And honestly, Lucy doesn't believe it either. They decide to sneak up the back of the building and peek into Lucy's apartment to confirm that the boys are actually there. And of course, in another ping pong, Ricky and Fred are having the same conversation about the ladies, so they go out the front door to ring the bell to the Mertz apartment just to make sure that the girls are actually home, just as Lucy and Ethel sneak into the apartment and see the boys are gone. Oh, we've got a sliding doors, noises off situation here. The ladies are so sad. They decide to not go down the back because it's cold, so they leave through the front door. They hear the guys coming back, and they run to hide on the roof until the guys go back into the apartment, and then they can sneak down. They don't want to be caught. But wait one second. Ricky decides to wait at the front door of the apartment until Lucy comes home that night, and Fred is going to join him. So the girls are trapped on the roof in nightgowns. It's cold. They got to get inside. But Lucy won't let Ethel go back in because pride is a thing. Ethel does not care anymore. Pride isn't important, but it doesn't matter because, what do you know, they've locked themselves on the roof. They have a good classic Lucy-style cry about their predicament. They try to get someone's attention on the street, but the only thought that Lucy can have about that is that Ethel leaps off the building, which is a very funny scene. They see a light on in an apartment across the way of a woman named Mrs. Sanders, who Ethel seems to know, but they can't get her attention. Finally, Lucy finds a plank, and she uses it to make the world's most terrifying bridge to the building next door. The gals bicker about who's going to cross the plank before Lucy agrees to try. She makes it. It's terrifying. I did not like it. It gave me so much anxiety. She makes Ethel do it too. Like, girl, just go across the street and let her in. Like, why are you forcing Ethel to do it? But anyway, Lucy waddles back over to help her cross. They panic. They run back to their roof. They knock the board down. So now they're still trapped. We do a little hand-wavy passage of time thing. The girls have fallen asleep. The boys come up. They're real jerks. They turn a hose on so that the girls wake up thinking it's raining. Turns out Mrs. Sanders called them and let them know that they were up there. The couples reconcile, and that's the episode. So what did we think? This episode is totally fine. That sounds like I don't like it. Oh, God. This episode is very good. I love all the parallels, but I also think that that's kind of its downfall. It's a little slow, like not too much happens. And honestly, every scene kind of gets a secondary scene. Like every scene is repeated. So we see it with the women and then we see it with the men and it's almost the exact same thing. And I don't find that to be the most compelling plot ever, but I think that the performances are super winning. And I think particularly Vivian Vance gets a lot to do in this episode. And even though we've had lots of instances where the men kind of team up against the women in many different forms, including in something as special as job switching, I feel truly like this is the first time that we really see Lucy and Ethel as a dynamic duo, true pair. Even like Pioneer Women, which is great, where they're kind of working together. This is the first time where the episode really is about Lucy and Ethel, and Ricky and Fred kind of take a back seat. And Lucy and Ethel feel really 50-50 split, as opposed to something like job switching, where, you know, Ethel is very clearly second in command. I feel like this episode really places them together and centers their friendship. And I liked that. That made me happy. The whole episode actually feels like there's a lot of real character establishment stuff, like for the couples across the board. You know, Fred makes these jokes about his marriage to Ethel. We see a real difference in the dynamic between their marriages, that the Mertzes kind of have an older marriage where maybe they're not as in love. You know, we see the difference in the two husbands. Ricky is very sad that Lucy won't be around because he wants to spend time with her. Fred is like, I don't care. They both come to the same conclusion of missing each other. What we're seeing in this episode is honestly like a lot of really basic but really foundational character and relational establishment. So I think what can sometimes happen when we have these like specific circumstance episodes, right? Like not like the operetta where it's like, oh, we're putting on a show for our women's club. For some reason, that feels less unique. This is more like we're making a bet that's going to change the circumstances of our lives, like a Pioneer Woman. Sometimes those episodes, just because they're so wildly surreal, which is what makes them great, they can kind of – they have to make allowances, or they have to fudge the characters a little bit in order to make it work. Be a Pal is like that. Honestly, I know I've brought up Be a Pal a lot lately, but I think that's one of the reasons why it was so unsuccessful to me is because they wanted to have that Carmen Miranda number at the end. And so to do that, they had to make Lucy Ricardo a person who would think that that's something that Ricky would want after 9 years of marriage. And so that fundamentally has to make her less intelligent, make her less aware of her marriage to Ricky, and make her more gullible than she is. And, you know, there's a lot that can be talked about like the stupidification of Lucy Ricardo and when they do that and when they don't, and when they make her smart and when they don't. But this is the Lucy that I know. She's intelligent and strong-willed and powerful, but she's also kind of foolish, which is different than being unintelligent. And this is also the Ethel Mertz that I know, someone who is confident in who she is, but, you know, can be talked into things by Lucy, but also steadfast. She doesn't want to do certain things. She's not going to let Lucy bully her around. She's not just there to be Lucy's best friend. She has a relationship with Fred, good or bad or indifferent, but it is rooted in love and attraction and wanting to feel loved and attractive. And then it's the Fred that I know. He's snarky and he's kind of rude to his wife, but he really does love her and he enjoys her company at the end of the day. And he likes to pretend that he's a bachelor who's got all this game, but at the end of the day, he just wants to be with Ethel. And then you've got Ricky, who this is, again, the Ricky that I know, someone who thinks Lucy's a little bit silly, but he agrees to go along with her weird ideas. And he really genuinely loves her at the end of the day, and he's kind of a snarky little punk, you know? And I think this episode succeeds where a few episodes in season one and at the beginning of this season have not failed, but just kind of walked a little farther along the tracks where these are the people that we know. This is the ensemble that we know. I like that it's a bottle episode. There's no one else in it except the four of them. I like that it's about the four of them. It's not about the Ricardos, and then the Mertzes are also there. It's about these four people who have built a community together, reinventing the way that community looks and then realizing it's not good. I know that might sound a little dramatic for what it is, but that's how I look at it. I view 623 East 68th Street and the relationship between the four of them as this kind of idyllic community that they've built, and I like when the four of them are together. And I think the scene on the roof is super, super funny. The line where Lucy tells Ethel to jump off the building to let the people know when a crowd accrues that she's up there is so funny. Vivian Vance's reaction is so funny. Lucille Ball's line reading is so funny. The plank scene where they're trying to like cross the alley is terrifying and really evocative. It's a good episode. It is slow. It is a little bit boring, but it's one that I haven't really seen that much, and I quite enjoy it. I would gladly watch this episode again. It's certainly not one that it's no like publicity agent where I was like, oh yeah, yay. It's just a lovely, simple little episode that I think has a lot of roots in like why we love the show and why we come back over and over to the show. And I like that it always ends the way that I want the show to end, which is that the couples make up and they love each other and they laugh and they hug. And that I think is really critical to the success of the show and to its longevity and to the reason that I come back, because you always feel, or at its best, you feel safe with these people. You feel that their relationship is safe and that their relationship is loving. And that's really powerful and really meaningful. So yeah, I think this episode kind of has a little bit of everything. It has some really funny scenes, has some really funny line reads, has Battle of the Sexes, has a little bit of a bet. It's great. Highly recommend it. All right, let's get into some historical notes. So this is the first and only time that we see the Mertz bedroom. It's very austere, by the way. The beds are like a really old school, like carved wood. They're kind of cool, but they're also kind of sad. I don't know why, but they remind me of like the Bates house in Psycho. Like just very formal, I suppose is the right term. But maybe they're really historically accurate. I mean, they weren't trying to be historically accurate at the time, but I don't know enough about furniture to know if that was just like they thought, oh, because Fred's a little bit older, maybe he would like this, or if like they were trying to make a commentary on, I don't know. Anyway, if you're a furniture historian and you watch this episode along with me, I'd love to hear if there's like some sort of commentary I'm missing with those beds. Anyway, this is also the first time that we see the roof of the apartment building. I don't have a memory of us seeing it again, but I know that when they move, there's like the Superman episode, and like we see their windowsill quite a bit, but I don't remember if we ever see the roof again. Let me know. But then I'd also, because this is the first time that I can remember them mentioning going to 21, it's probably not, but I thought I'd do just a little historical information on 21 because it's going to come up quite a few more times. So the 21 Club was a restaurant with typical American cuisine that actually was a speakeasy in the Prohibition era, and it was on West 52nd Street, so it was about 16 blocks down from East 68th Street and across town. So they would have had to cross, what would that have been? Central Park, or go down and around Central Park to get there. So it would have been a little bit of a ways away. Definitely not super easy to get to from where they were, but not impossible. It was active for 90 years before closing very sadly. No, don't say that yet. So it was a very, very popular restaurant. Elizabeth Taylor frequented there. Sophia Loren frequented there. A lot of the different former presidents, JFK, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford frequented there. And actually the club would store their private wine collections there, which is a very cool random thing. But every celebrity under the sun was going there at the time. So the idea of going to 21 for dinner, and not just once, but four times in a week, is a huge deal. They had a dress club. You always had to wear a necktie. Up until 2009, you had to wear a necktie if you were a man going there. They charged outrageous prices for food. In 1950, the kind of cliche example of this is that burgers were costing a dime at most coffee shops, but the 21 Club was charging $2.75. So just for, you know, so that's what, 275 times the cost. So this is one of the most exclusive places in New York City, especially at that time. We're talking Marilyn Monroe, Sammy Davis Jr., Judy Garland, Mae West, the Onassis, like everybody was going to 21. So a huge, huge deal for them to go. Sadly, the 21 Club actually closed as a result of the COVID pandemic in 2020. And they're actually in a little bit of hot water because the employees at the 21 Club were mostly unionized, and they closed the club without reopening and just laid everybody off, which is not union appropriate. And they, I don't know if they're in some sort of a lawsuit about it, but they're definitely in trouble. So kind of a sad ending for a huge landmark of New York City, and especially of the 50s in New York City. But we will hear from the 21 Club many more times in our upcoming episodes. So next week, there is no episode. It's another bonus episode, and I am very nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm very nervous about next week's episode because I'm kind of doing a hot take episode. So if you enjoyed this episode, please take the time to rate and review this on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen and can review or rate a podcast. I so appreciate it. You can also tell a friend about the podcast. If you would like to support the podcast financially, you can do so by leaving me a one-time donation at the PayPal link in the description box of this episode. If you have an opportunity to leave a note, by the way, and if you do make a donation and you'd like to have something read on air, I'd be happy to do so as a thank you. What else? Oh, if you'd like to reach out to me for any reason whatsoever, I'd be so honored to hear from you. I've really loved hearing from people about their favorite episodes of season one and kind of what they would rank as best and worst. You can reach me at theRicardoProject@gmail.com, on Instagram at theRicardoProject, at Twitter at Ricardo_project. And that's it. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you next week for a bonus episode of The Ricardo Project.